It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 214. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined by former Cougar and current ESPN 960 personality, Ben Criddle. We discuss what we should expect from Solani Sitake and break down that strange loss against Utah. Matt and I then discuss the bowl, project some of Sitake's coaching staff, or at least who we think might be a good fit, preview men basketball's trip to Hawaii, and preview a bunch of mostly lousy bowl games. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us right now. Welcoming to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, former Cougar and current host on ESPN 960 Sports. That's 4 to 7 p.m. Mountain Time. It's Ben Criddle. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Much appreciated.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Ben, was you tweeted out a little bit about your experience with Kalani Sitake, who, of course, was named today as the new coach of BYU football. I was curious to get your perspective as someone who's been coached by him a little bit and also got to know him a little bit. What should we expect from Coach Sitake?
You know, it's interesting. I had the very much raw Kalani Sitake as a first-time coach at Eastern Arizona Junior College. So, but one thing is for certain, you know, the passion and the way that he goes about his work day is still the same as what it once was. So the energy levels, how much the most important thing that, in my personal opinion, I talk about it a lot, I tell fans about it a lot, is if when you put the student athlete first and you truly love and you care about the student athlete, you know, you become that second father figure or that father figure to some, then everything else takes care of itself. The fans, the donors, the administration, and everyone that's a part of BYU football will all fall in line, because the Warriors, the student athletes, those gladiators that are going out there and competing for our entertainment are put first. And I'm not saying entitlement. I'm not saying, you know, pay for play. I'm just talking about that person as a whole, spiritually, mentally, physically, is put first before anything else. And so Kalani does that. He did that since day one with me. There's a number of different examples that I could give you where he showcased that priority of putting that athlete first and showing that passion, that energy to helping all of us succeed. That's what's going to make him successful, and that's what I remember most about being coached by Kalani Sitake.
So one of the things that was different today, Ben, from when Coach Mendenhall was hired and when Gary Croton was hired, is, of course, Sitake was a former BYU player, was coached by Lavelle Edwards, and Gary Croton and Bronco Mendenhall were not former BYU players. Today, his announcement was filled with, you know, Lavelle Edwards was there. Lots of alumni who were available came to support Kalani. What do you think that means to you as former players and to the fans to have one of their own, for the first time basically ever, named as a head coach?
Well, I mean, I still felt like when Bronco Mendenhall became head coach or when Gary became head coach, I mean, you're still a BYU fan no matter what. I mean, if you're a part of the BYU fraternity, then you're a part of it. You bought into it. You're a fan. You're a fanatic, and you're loyal to that. When they talk about loyal, strong, and true, I truly feel it, that's what BYU fans, you know, they buy into that, and, you know, they can't be deconverted from that. But I think it's special to watch a guy like Kalani progress through the coaching ranks and have so much success in not only, you know, strategy and you know, in the wins and losses and, you know, being a defensive coordinator, a position coach, and as a recruiter, but you know, just as a you know, as a Polynesian, you know, in this in the football world, I think that's tremendous. And he downplayed it today. He said, you know, I'm just I mean, I'm a Tongan, yes, but that's just only a part of me. I think embracing him as one of the brothers of that band, of that brotherhood, that fraternity, is important. And many people are excited because he understands what it means to be a former player. So that makes it probably a little bit more special, because we know that he will embrace us, not just give us things or facilitate some sort of entitlement because we are former players, but he'll embrace us the best that he can, the best that he knows how. And we know that he's going to be transparent in his motives as a head coach and how he feels about, embracing that alumni. So it's a special moment, I think, for BYU football players that have played with him or been coached by him, or even, guys in the 80s that have watched him grow as a coach. He's a BYU guy. He'll always be a BYU guy. So whenever a son returns back to BYU, I think we all rejoice.
Yeah, I think, and the fans certainly as well. We're pretty excited today in person and on Twitter. One of the things that, of course, the next step for Coach Satake is putting together his staff. Most of Broncos' staff followed him to the University of Virginia. As he puts together that staff, what do you think he needs to do in order to put together a great staff that will enable what you talked about, putting the athlete first, as well as gearing BYU up to win in what are gearing up to be a couple of really tough schedules coming up?
Yeah, ultimately it doesn't really matter what I think. I'm going to give you my opinion, but the worst thing that Kalani Sitake could do is listen to all of us as to how he should do things.
Right? Yes, he probably should not form it by Twitter poll. I would say
no. He shouldn't do it on a Twitter poll. He shouldn't do it on any sort of fan poll or anything like that, or listen to donors. He has to have a vision for how he's going to accomplish his mission, how he's going to structure his team, and he can listen and like everybody's opinion matters, but ultimately he needs to be the decision maker. And if he doesn't have that vision, if he's not decisive, I feel like the most successful people in this life know exactly what they want and how they're going to execute it. They have the vision, right? If you don't have that vision, you might just perish and you're going to be influenced by so many different people. I think Bronco Mendenhall experienced that. He wanted to make people happy. He wanted to listen to people in the AD department, with the fans, the donors. But once he decided he was going to do it his way, then I think he saw success. Same thing for Kalani. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what the fans think. It matters only what Kalani thinks. And then he's got to get buy-in from his coaches, whoever he surrounds himself with. But from the mouth of Kalani, he's going to bring in well-rounded recruiters. He feels that, once again, lifeblood of the program are your former, current, and your future players. You treat them properly and you put them first, then everything takes care of itself. Everyone will flock to the program if you do that. So you got to surround yourself with guys that have that same vision, that are good recruiters, that want to embrace the mentality of student athlete first. You do that and everything will take care of itself, because they're passionate. They love people. They love football. They love people first. Okay. They love people first and helping them. And then secondary to that is football. Okay. Now we're going to make you a good football player because I love you. And I want you to be successful. I'm going to get the most out of you. Now let's go. Let's execute. Okay. And if you come at it with that approach, that's who he's going to hire. That's who he's going to build. And that's key. That's the most important part in my opinion. And I think that's what he articulated today.
Yeah, absolutely. Leaving the optimism surrounding his hire, of course, there was a football game on Saturday. Have you ever seen a football game or participated in one that started off as poorly as it did for the Cougars? Five possessions, five turnovers, five touchdowns for your rival, and all of a sudden fans, players, coaches are all looking up at a 35-0 hole.
I've never experienced that. I've never seen it. I've never seen a team at BYU. I was trying to look for a stat somewhere. I couldn't find any any games in which BYU was, what, -5 in turnover margin and actually won a football game. I don't know how many games in college football history have where a team is -5 in turnover margin and still won the football game. That's a rarity. I really don't know if it exists. Maybe you guys can find that out for me, or I'll tweet it at Greg Rubel. But, yeah, it was a big hole. And did I believe that they could come back? Sure. I was just happy that they were in a position to win the football game, and it came down to me, who was the better and bigger man, right? It came down to trench warfare. Something that Kalani Sitake talked about today is winning the trenches is one of the most important things. Ultimately, the better team that day won, and it was Utah. And they're the better team, not because they created necessarily 5 turnovers, but because when it came down to that final scrum, their guys won their one-on-ones in the trenches. They gained, so you have 3 minutes left. You have 2 timeouts with BYU, in the driver's seat. They have the momentum. If they get a stop right now, they have plenty of time to score and take this thing into overtime. They can't stop a running back that they know is going to run the football. They can't stop an offensive line from getting a push when they know that they're coming forward and shooting across that line of scrimmage. That's mano a mano. That's human being versus human being, and BYU wasn't able to win that. And so ultimately Utah was the better football team that day, and that's all I cared about in that game. That's really, once it got to that point where BYU was competitive, when it truly mattered most, You couldn't accomplish what you set out to do. You couldn't win those one-on-ones. You couldn't win the trench warfare, and that's why you ultimately lost this football game. A lot of freak things happen in football. The ball doesn't bounce your way. Balls get deflected. Crazy stuff happens that you really have no control over. This is like a chaotic chess game that's going on. You try to strategize and everything like that, but then, crap hits the fan. Well, BYU's, they experienced that, but when it came down to that final possession, that final drive, and they weren't able to do anything.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ben, that is how it went down. And though they made it an exciting game, and I'm sure you, like many others, very proud of them not giving up. Like you said, it's still in the end. I'm mm-hmm. with you. The better team wins. You don't. You can't live on excuses. I'll get you out on one last question. No spoilers, of course. But were you one of the millions that saw The Force Awakens this weekend?
Yeah, you know it, man. I will definitely try to, in my new home, when I build my thermal oscillator, I'm going to make sure that my defense is much better than the first order, man. You got to be good about it. You got to make sure you protect the thermal oscillator.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, Ben, thank you again for coming on the podcast. We'll of course encourage all of our fans to listen to you on ESPN 960, 4-7 Mountain Time as you talk Cougar sports. Thanks again, Ben, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate all you guys do. Keep it up.
Rise and Shout Podcast, CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, there's only one way to open this show.
I'm not sure where you're going here.
How can you not know where I'm going? I know the answer to this question. Have you seen The Force Awakens?
Yes, I have.
We will do no spoilers, okay? No spoilers on this show. We're recording this Monday night. I will be seeing it for the second time tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Sorry, BYU and Harvard, but it's Star Wars. Matt, 9 out of 10. What's your rating out of 10?
Oh, I'd give it a 10 out of 10, and I'm not even a Star Wars guy.
Whoa, look at you go.
Oh, I loved it. And
you watched the originals right before, right?
Yep. So my son and I, we watched 4, 5, and 6, and then we went today, and now he wants to watch 1, 2, and 3 starting tomorrow.
Well, that's unfortunate, but I actually don't hate the prequels.
He has some questions that I think really, because I don't have the depth of knowledge that some of my more dedicated Star Wars fans have. I think he needs to watch 1, 2, and 3 for the context.
Yes, and we did 1 through 6 with my oldest, and You know what was the funnest part about the whole experience, Matt? Was not just the movie, which I thought was awesome, but getting to watch my daughter have a movie of her own, right? Because she's watched the first six, but none of them came out while she was alive. They're not her movie, right? They're dad's movie. This was her movie. Like, she came out of it just psyched. When can we go see it again? Are there Star Wars books I can read? You know, it suddenly stopped being dad's thing, and now it was her thing. And watching her watch the movie where I don't know what's going to happen, you know, she doesn't know what's going to happen, it was cool. It was a lot of fun, that part of the experience too.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So go out and see it if you haven't, because eventually, in the upcoming weeks, we will have guests and there will be spoilers. So make sure you – but we'll warn everybody ahead of time.
I'm sure you and Jerem will talk about it at some point.
Oh, you better believe it. And we'll have Alan Seawright back on to talk about it. He hates the prequels with a burning passion. So we'll be interested to get some takes from some of our frequent ones. So, Matt, I do want to do something here for you. Can you hear this? Listen closely. See, I don't usually...
Oh, you popped a top off a bottle.
I'm trying. There we go. I'm a Mormon. I don't do that very often. It is Dr. Pepper made with sugar.
Oh, boy.
So that's what I'm fueled by tonight. What are you fueled by?
Same as always. A little Diet Mountain Dew, baby.
Awesome. You know, the sugar thing, it tastes different. I'm not going to say necessarily better all the time, but it definitely has a different taste. I like it.
You like it better than that high fructose corn syrup, do you?
Well, as a guy that works in agriculture, I cannot say that. We're fans of corn in all its forms. So go buy stuff with corn in it. Anyway, Matt, we have a full show, so we're going to get to it. We got to talk about the bowl game. We got to talk about a new coach. And we got to talk basketball. And then we've got to preview 14 bowl games.
That's a lot to do.
So let's get cracking. The Vegas Bowl, we are skipping Cougars in the News this week, by the way. Sorry, Cougars in the News. We'll get back to you in upcoming podcasts. Matt, the Las Vegas Bowl was obviously a massive disappointment. But, hey, we won three quarters.
Yay for moral victories.
So, Matt, you know, I had an interesting experience watching this game. We have actually not talked. We've texted a little bit since the game. I'm curious to how you viewed that loss after getting a day or so to absorb the game and what happened. So what is your like big takeaway? How do you see this loss?
You know, I'm not a big fan of moral victories. I mean, it's a loss. We got, they were the better team. Utah was a better team on Saturday, played a better football game, and came out with the win. I think that there are a couple things. Obviously, there's a handful of things that were really frustrating about that game. But at the end of the day, it's just one game. And it was still a pretty good season, given everything that the team was up against. You know, they won a lot of football games. There were some exciting games to watch. There's reason to be excited about the future going into next season. So I think if you take it into that context, it's not as bad. But, you know, I think during the first quarter, I felt like I wanted to throw up. At the end of the game, I still feel like I wanted to throw up. And today I was over at somebody's house and they asked me about it and I felt like I wanted to throw up. So that's basically how I view it.
So, Matt, you look back, it's now five straight losses to the University of Utah, which
is
not
that all?
Good. It feels longer. The only game that was a complete disaster, which we were referencing here in my house as we were watching it, my father-in-law and my friend Seth, you know, was the 54-10 game from 2011, right?
And I was having flashbacks to that when...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought this game was going to be. I am with you. There are no moral victories, right? And Utah deserved to win. None of my comments should be construed as I'm making excuses or we deserve to win. Five turnovers in your first five possessions is, I mean, it happens like in college football, all of college football, it happens every, something like that, every five, six, 7 years, right?
Right. I mean, it's a very almost singular type of event.
Yes. I mean, the two interceptions, the first one should have been a pass interference call, and it was a pop-up, and then the guy caught it. The second one, it was a tipped pass. Great play by the lineman to get his hands up. And, you know, it's there. The third one, I'm trying to remember the third interception. I blocked that one out. Then, of course, the fumble. Squally Canada gets, I believe he only had the one carry, right?
Yep. I think that was the only play he was on the field for.
I believe that's true, and he fumbled. And that's the danger of having a guy that hasn't had any games all year play in a bowl game. But again, anybody could have dropped it. And then, of course, Mangum's fumble as well. So I guess it was two interceptions, right? Or no, he had three.
Yeah, he had a third one.
Three. And then the worst pass he threw, they dropped. Right, he threw it right at the Utah defender, and the guy dropped it. Matt, my biggest takeaway is I'm with you, but I was really proud of how the team played. That was easy to fold it up and go home.
They had every reason in the world to fold it up and go home. They absolutely did.
The defense played magnificent. I lay this entire loss at the feet of the offense and the offensive coaching staff.
Well, and I think the big issue for me was the offensive line. I mean,
yes.
You look at a couple of those interceptions, the tip by the defensive end, the Tanner Mangum fumble where he did the – I was almost like – I don't want to get into making fun of previous quarterbacks or anything, but he's being taken down and he tries to throw it, right, and he fumbles the football. Now, but he had he should have just taken the sack.
Yes.
But the issue was that he had defensive linemen in his face immediately after the snap.
Yes.
All day long. I mean, I remember watching one play and it set up as if it were a screen. Like there was every single offensive lineman had a defensive lineman behind them.
Yes.
And the ball had just been snapped, but it wasn't a screen. I mean, it was just, I think, and the other side of the football is the offensive line. Also, their offensive line looked better than our defensive line. I mean, it's just.
I don't know if I agree with that second one. I thought we dominated their offensive line. They averaged 3.1 yards per offensive play. I thought defensively we did everything. If you had told me that Utah would average 3.1 yards per play, I would have thought we won by two or three touchdowns. Right? I mean, we didn't see that coming. We thought they would be able to run the ball better than they even did. I mean, besides a couple of runs that they broke, which is going to happen on occasion, and you know, they didn't throw a lot of passes, but I thought our defensive
line... Well, they didn't need to, right?
No, they did not. But I thought our defensive line was fine. I thought our defensive backs played very well. I thought Prater showed why, and it's no disrespect to Wadsworth because I feel for the guy, you know, gets hurt in his last game. But Prater came up and made some stops in the running game that I hadn't seen our safeties do all year.
And I will say this. I mean, as much as Hanneman gets picked on, has been picked on by offenses all year and got picked on last Saturday, his sack was pretty awesome.
Yes. He's a great athlete, and I hope he gets better. And he may end up being a better safety at some point, than he is a corner. And Davis is, of course, we never talk about him because nobody throws the ball anywhere near him,
right?
Which is fantastic to have. Matt, let's we're not going to spend the whole time talking about this. Matt, do you think first? Let's head to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
The first tweet bag question is: this is Taysom Fredette. That's at BYU. What is his full thing? BYU Bro Chacho. I don't believe his name is actually Taysom or Fredette. He asks, have you ever thought of shortening the tweet bag and going with hashtag teabag?
Matt. You know, I see a couple of problems there.
Okay.
Actually, I just thought of a third one. I don't think I can mention two of them. So one of them, okay, well, there's the whole, I'm not a tea drinker myself.
Really?
I know a lot of tea drinkers. I may or may not have tea in my cupboard for people who come over here and frequent my house. But there's also, it sounds close to a negative name that I've heard people call each other every once in a while.
Yes.
And it also... that it also references some things I'm going to stay away from. So I'm going to go ahead and just stick with Tweetbag.
Tweetbag is it, and sorry, Taysom, for that. Though I think he was probably joking. You know how Taysom is. And
That old Taysom Fredette.
So another
That's a pretty sweet name on Twitter, though.
That is a pretty sweet name. BYU Bro Chacho. So Brian Taylor, that's at Boozer Taylor, asks us, can you explain why BYU commits so many turnovers against Utah? Is it mental weakness, too much emotion? He's a little bit baffled by why BYU is so bad with the turnovers in these games. Matt, I went back and looked. There definitely have been. We all know that. The 54-10 game had some, and some of the other games. When I went back and looked, though, you know we have a turnover problem, not against just Utah. It's against the better teams that we play.
And this is a team that defensively shows up very well prepared. I mean, it's not because, and I don't want to get into the whole K-Witt, you know, is more into the rivalry than Bronco is. It's just that those defenses come to play.
Yes. I will tell you what was the highlight of the entire game for me because, well, I mean, there were some highlights, of course, but Whittingham absolutely slamming his team.
He was furious after the game.
And you know what? We're not going to spend time on this because you and I both believed he was never coming to Provo. I want that kind of fire. He should be mad at his team. Yeah, they won and they got the win, but his offense played terribly for three straight games after having their best player hurt, which I get, but you know you still have to play, right? And his defense kind of started letting up. I mean, it became very clear that all of a sudden we had a wide open wide receivers all over the field,
right?
When that was not true at the beginning of the game. So I was impressed by Witt's reaction. I think our new coach may have similar reactions in the future, though he probably would handle it a little differently. There is danger in calling out your players on national TV. But Matt, let's talk about that new coach, and let's move off of the pessimism engendered by the bowl game to the optimism brought by hiring a new coach.
Hey, isn't it great when you think about the timing of what Holmo did, holding on to that information till after the game? Because in a win, now you're just building off the excitement. In a loss, you take the misery of the loss and you flip it to, hey, guys, look who we got coming in next year for our new coach. It's this guy that everybody wanted. Like, this is exciting. This is a brand new era of football. Look what he's going to be able to do for the program. I mean, it's just the timing I thought was very well done by Tom Holmo.
Here's the thing. All the people on Twitter saying, they got just tell us before the game. Stupid. You're absolutely right. Hold the information. You don't want to take away from, number one, the game itself, right? You're not going to hold any type of press conference till Monday anyway. Holmo knows what he's doing.
It's an easy principle.
Yes. I completely
bad agree. News, you deliver bad news right away. Good news can always wait.
And you hold it till the best time to do it. So, that's Matt, right. What do you like most about this hire of Kalani Sitake? Both you and I had him higher on our list than Ken Niumatalolo. I finally learned to say his name, but he's not going to be our coach. We both had Sitake higher. What do you like about him being named head coach?
Well, I really like that he's a – there's a lot of things that I like about this. I like that he's a BYU guy. I like that he played in the program. I don't think it's insignificant also that he's the first Tongan head coach at this level. And for that to be at BYU, I think is important. And that's something that I think that the program can be proud of.
I completely agree with both those points. I also like the fact that he is a fiery kind of players coach. And this isn't a knock on Bronco. You and I were both pro Bronco. We didn't want him to be fired or anything like that. I think though their perception are real. I'm not 100% sure, but I think for a lot of folks, Bronco seemed a little cold. Now I think he came out of his shell in the last few seasons. Before that, Croton was kind of cold, and Lavelle was not the guy to show a lot of emotion. I think Satake will be a breath of fresh air in that respect for the media, for the fans, and for the players that he coaches. Matt, is there anything that worries you about this hire?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to one of the things that I talked about when we, as we've been working through the whole coach search process here, right? And that is the Oregon State defense in 2015, not good. And that does make me a little bit nervous. I understand it's not his guys. I understand it wasn't a lot of time. You know, and I get that. But the other thing I'll connect that to is, and I understand it's a limited pool of candidates and all this, but a guy who does not have head coaching experience also makes me nervous. And then you think about, well, who's he bring in? Who are the possibilities for coordinators and those types of things? But for me, it's those two things. It's the recent history with Oregon State, and it's the fact that it's his first head coaching job here. He's not been a head coach somewhere else.
Yes, yes. I'll address the first one. So from the tweet bag, John Harrison, that's at Toffee Tech on Twitter, he asks us, how concerned should I be about the Oregon State defense this year? I'm going to tell you this, Matt. I don't think you should be concerned at all. All right? You ready for me to present my case?
Okay, I'm sure you're going to come at me with all sorts of advanced statistics. Are you about to use the phrase advanced statistics?
I am about to use the phrase advanced statistics.
I knew it. I saw it coming from a mile away.
So Oregon State defense was terrible this year, okay? They were 111th in the country, according to Football Outsiders. Okay? Not good. 100th against the pass, 114th. I'm sorry, 100th against the run, 114th against the pass. Not good. The year before, they had finished 73rd. More respectable, Oregon State. Obviously, Satake was not the coach then, but 115th against the run, all right? Mm. And 37th against the pass. They had some turnover. They lost some of the players. I won't get into all that, but I did look into some of that. So Utah, Matt, in his 3 years, they finished 65th, his first year, 29th, and 30th, okay? The year before he got there in 2011, they had a great defense that Football Outsiders has ranked 14th. And this year, they had 20th. Now, you could weave that story however you want. His defenses got better, but they were better the year before he came, and they're better the year he left. Here's my takeaway. He is a really good defensive coach. 1 year at Oregon State does not erase 3 good years at Utah. It just doesn't to me. And Oregon State had other issues, and that was his first year there. I think they would have gotten substantially better. But here's the bigger thing to me about this whole thing. I don't really care that much because I don't think he's going to run the defense. In the end, we hired a CEO, not a coordinator. And if I have anything against Bronco, it's the fact that he could never find somebody to run the defense so he could be a head coach.
Yeah, I see that. I think that's an important point. When you go to the comments that Holmo made today at the press conference, you go to the comments that Whittingham has made about him, you know, and other people that have coached with him and his leadership and his ability to kind of mold these players and get them excited about what they're doing. His pregame talks at Utah are apparently legendary, right?
Right.
So I think there are some good things in there. And so... the big question is, what does he do as far as coordinators are concerned?
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second, Matt. Before we go there, USA Today, in an article about all the coaching hires, they gave BYU a C for the hire, basically saying that he hadn't been a head coach and that we had lost on our first choice in Neo Matalolo. Matt, I'm on record, you're on record. I would rather have Satake. I would rather have the young coach with a high ceiling than a coach that, yeah, he had a head coaching experience, but gosh, Neil Matalolo never had to recruit the way Satake has recruited at Utah. And the guys that he got in 1 year, Polynesian guys out of Utah to go to Oregon State, you know what I mean? Like, this guy brings a lot of good things. I don't think it's a C. Do you think that's too high or too low, the grade for hiring?
I think it's too low. But the thing is, it's difficult on, you know, these national writers, I think, have a hard time understanding the context of a BYU hire. But, you know, I think it's definitely higher than a C. But I also, how do you give a grade to a guy who's on his first day on the job? You know what I mean? You can kind of look and say, well, this is what we think he's worth. This is, you know, and yeah. This is what we think BYU could have gotten.
Well, if it's Kyle Whittingham, or Bevins, I think people give it an A, right?
Well, and I think in that article they said that Neil Mattalolo would have been a home run, so I'm assuming that that would have been an A.
He's not an A. There's too many question marks coming out of Navy. What would the offense look like?
Well, if Ken's an A, Kalani's at least a B.
Yes, right? I would give it a B or a B plus. I think, you know, there are dangers in hiring somebody that played there, right? You know, you don't want to overplay that. But on the other hand, we've had two straight coaches with very little connection to the program. Though it's a little unfair to Bronco; he had been a coach at BYU, right? The couple seasons before that. But, you know, to have his press conference surrounded by a bunch of BYU former players, there's a lot of positives there, Matt.
Well, and I think the former players are really excited about him. I think they're reaching out, and they want to be involved, and they want to be a part of it. And, you know, but the thing that makes me a little bit nervous, because I doubt he's looking at it this same way, but, and I know we're going to get to this in a minute, but when you all fans want to talk about in terms of potential hires, it's all lists of former players.
Yes.
Fault.
Yeah, because that's who you know, right? There will be people that end up getting hired that we weren't talking about. So we'll get to that now, Matt. Will Rankin on Twitter, that's at WillRankin89, says who should Satake be targeting to fill his staff? And Justin Whiting on Twitter, that's at JNWhiting. How about your predictions on new assistant coaches? So I've got a list here, Matt, of coaches that have been mentioned on Twitter. Daily Herald had a nice slideshow about potential coaches, and we're going to go through each of them. We're not going to spend a lot of time, but we're going to go through each of these names. I want you to give me thumbs up or thumbs down, or you could do, like, I don't know, if you're a pansy. And then percent chance you think they're on the staff in 2016. All right? You ready?
Okay, so thumbs up, thumbs down, and then
percent chance they're
percent
on the staff.
Percent chance they're on the staff. All right, all right, I'm with you.
So let's start off with ESPN commentator and former national champion, I believe, and played on the same offensive line as Robert and I, Trevor Maddich. Thumbs up or thumbs down him having a presence on the staff?
Oh, thumbs up. I love thumbs Trevor up. Maddich, and I think he'd be great.
Me too, thumbs up. Percent chance?
Zero.
I was going to say one. How's that? I don't think he's coming, but you never know. The other part, of course, is he's been a commentator, broadcaster, not a coach over the last however many years. So interesting. Matt, Paul Tidwell, one of the few folks that did not follow Bronco to Virginia. He was coaching the linebackers, I believe, inside or outside this year.
Inside.
Inside linebackers this year. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Paul Tidwell?
Thumbs up on Paul Tidwell.
I also would give a thumbs up, but, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if the linebackers are coached by somebody else. Percent chance Paul Tidwell comes back?
I'm going to put like 85% on that.
I was going to put like 70, so we're fairly close.
So the thing with Paul Tidwell is if you go through Paul Tidwell's experience, right, and I just stay out of high school experience, right? You go back to the mid-1980s and kind of places he's been and what he's done. He doesn't have to coach the inside linebackers. There's a lot of things that Paul Tidwell can do.
That's
and
true.
I think you want to keep some guys that were already there.
Yes. A little bit of continuity is good.
That's right. I mean, you can have this. He's done special teams before at BYU. He's done running backs at BYU. He's done tight ends in other places. He's done defensive backs. You know, this is a guy who has been a head coach at some places. So I think that I think you can find a place for Paul Tidwell if it's not with the linebackers.
I agree. Matt, Sean Nua is at Navy, was supposedly going to Virginia. Word out of today is that he's not going to Virginia.
He pulled a Roderick.
So Nua is, what is his position at Navy?
Defensive line.
Defensive line, right. So Nua, thumbs up or thumbs down on Sean Nua?
You want to put it
somewhere in the middle, don't you?
Pansy. Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle on Sean Nua.
So
be honest.
So am I. Percent chance you think he's on the staff next year?
30%.
I was going to give it like 45.
He's probably on Satake's list. Maybe he get maybe he gives him a phone call. But my guess is that Ken and the Navy AD sat down with Sean and gave him, you know, gave him a raise or some other type of incentive to keep him around.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. Matt, current co-offensive coordinator, is that correct? Aaron Roderick at the University of Utah.
Yeah, I can't keep track of all their titles up there.
Neither can I. I have no idea what they're doing. Matt, Aaron Roderick, former BYU player, thumbs up or thumbs down?
You know, I'm going to go with a thumbs down on Aaron Roderick. I think we dodged a bullet by not getting him the first time.
I agree with you. Percent chance you think he's on the staff next year?
20.
I was going to say 30. I don't like his offense. I don't. I don't like the offense. I thought his play calling or whoever is calling the plays on Saturday was atrocious.
I've thought about that. And the Saturday game, when you look at that, and I want to get back into the bowl game again, but when you get up 35 to nothing in the first quarter, what are you going to do?
You run your offense and you blow BYU out of the freaking water. That's what you do. You do not play conservative. And you do not call the same play about 8 times in a row.
But I don't think that's a good sample of the offense.
I'll tell you what a good sample is. These last 3 games when they didn't have an NFL level running back. They were terrible.
That's a better evaluation than just Saturday. I'll give you that.
They were terrible. Now, I get it. Their best player wasn't on the field. It's hard to adjust midseason. I get all of those things. But they went from having a very good offense to having one of the nation's worst over the last 3 games. I mean, it's a massive... You shouldn't have that kind of drop-off, even as good as Booker is, which he is. He's a fantastic player. I don't want Roderick. No interest. Matt, next up, one of my favorite all-time BYU Cougars, who, in a rivalry game, sealed a win in 2001 against Utah, Gennaro Guilford.
I'd give that a thumbs up.
I give it a thumbs up. Percent chance?
5?
I was going to say like 45.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a former BYU guy. He's, you know, done some coaching already. I think he's got a shot at getting on. But you'll notice most of mine are in that somewhere between 40 to 60 range, because what that really means is I have no clue if any of these guys are coming.
I have a hard time, and, you know, we talked about this, getting it, because it's not going to be – this isn't going to be a BYU – all-time football team turned into coaches.
Right. No, it is not.
Right? And that's just not. And if it is, I think we're going to have problems.
Yeah, nor should it be. I'm with you. Ben Cahoon, all-time leading CFL wide receiver and former wide receiver coach at BYU under Brandon Doman.
Yep.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
I'm pro Cahoon. I'm going to start off and say it's a 1% chance.
Oh, I was going to give him like a 55% chance.
I hope that he doesn't feel this way about BYU. I wanted him to stay. I was disappointed when Anai didn't, but Anai wanted one of his guys. So I hope Ben comes back, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some, well, you know, you guys kicked me to the curb just 2 years ago.
There might be a little bit of that there. And the other issue is that I'd like to see Guy Holliday stick around.
Yes.
Right? So if you bring in Ben Cahoon, what do you do with him?
Yes, yes. Maybe he starts a Tidwell-like career where it's not just about wide receivers, you know, either Guy Holliday or Ben Cahoon. Next on the list, Matt, is Dennis Simmons.
Thumbs up.
Absolute thumbs up for me as well. Potential coordinator?
I think he, you know, and I know you and I have talked about this, you know, this is a guy who's got some position coaching experience, but he's been on some really killer staffs.
Yes,
he has. He's been in and around the right kind of offenses, I think, to do at BYU what fans would like to see and what it sounds like Satake would like to run. So I think Simmons is a potential candidate for offensive coordinator.
Yes,
and I could get behind that, even though I'll say this about all of these guys. I always get nervous about BYU being a place for somebody new as a coordinator or a head coach cutting their teeth.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I'm a thumbs down on Simmons only because I'm not interested in the air raid offense at all. We ran that offense before with Anai, and it has some issues. The weird thing they do with the offensive line, you know, with the spacing and some of that stuff. I don't think you can become an elite offense with that offense. There's a few years of exceptions to that, and obviously, and I had pretty good success with it at beginning, but I think people have figured out the air raid. Percent chance that Simmons is on the staff next year?
70.
Oh, wow. I had 35, but, you know, we're kind of messing around here. Brandon Doman coming back in some capacity. Matt, I give that a thumbs down.
I'm also a thumbs down on
percent
Brandon
chance,
Doman.
I think, is zero.
Yeah. I was going to say 5% on Brandon Doman.
But he's not coming. I mean, he was a disaster as a coordinator. I mean, there's no other way for me to put it. I love the guy. I loved him as a quarterback. I've met him. He's a super nice guy. But he isn't coaching.
Right. And do you think there would also be a little bit of that same thing you were worried about with Ben Cahoon with him? Oh, I feel like it'd be even worse with him.
Times 10.
I mean, he's just been, you know, I think that the way that shook out for him was, and it was a little bit, in his defense, I don't think he was ready to be a coordinator.
Well, and I don't think he had the right groceries either, unfortunately. I mean, some of this is your offense that you create. Some of this is the fact that he didn't have a Tanner Mangum. You know what I mean? When he was the coordinator, he didn't have the type of talent there. So, Matt, I'm excited about a couple of these ones coming up. We'll breeze through them pretty quick. Ed Lamb, who's of course at Southern Utah, thumbs up or thumbs down to him joining the staff?
Thumbs up on Ed Lamb.
Me too. Percent chance?
75.
Oh, I was going to say 55, so we're both above 50.
Well, a lot of these guys that were kind of close in that era with Coach Satake, I feel like I have a pretty good chance of getting phone calls. I mean, he's going to reach out to guys that he knows that understand the program and have experience in the right places. This is a guy I'd really like to see get onto the staff.
Yes, I agree with you. Norm Chow, thumbs down, 0% chance.
Yeah, thumbs down, 0%. Norm Chow's not coming back.
Norm Chow, nor should he. I mean, at this point, you know, I love Norm Chow, and he did a lot of good things for BYU, but that's not likely to happen. Steve Kaufusi, thumbs up, bring him back.
Yeah, and I'd say the same stuff about Kaufusi as I said about Tidwell. There's a lot of things you can do with Kaufusi, and you need some continuity.
Guy Holiday, thumbs up, bring him back, please.
I think everybody, that's like a consensus all Twitter vote, right?
Yes.
For a Guy Holiday to make it back. It'll be interesting to see if he does or not.
I think this year we had receivers max out their potential. I really do. I kind of feel like with different coaching, this is a mediocre group that you go, wow, maybe they could have been more. And instead, they were this well-rounded, almost interchangeable parts group, which was fantastic. Ty Detmer. Thumbs down. Not interested.
Yeah, and I feel bad saying that one. And I get in, you know.
I don't feel bad. He coaches high school. You don't go from high school to BYU. You go from high school to Southern Utah. I have no interest. I don't care that he's the best quarterback we've ever had. That is irrelevant to me. Absolutely irrelevant. That is an emotional argument that holds no water for me. He needs to prove somewhere else or come in as like, you know, something, not even quarterback's coach, below that. And I also think it's a mess to hire somebody that 20% of the fan base is going to be the first time Satake makes a mistake is going to say, we should hire Detmer.
Yep.
You know? So I am thumbs down. I think there's a 5% chance.
Yeah, I think it's probably lower than that.
One I'm very excited about, Matt, Harvey Unga. Thumbs up. If it's true that his conversation with Algie Brown turned Algie Brown from what I thought was almost a negative in the running game to a positive, you know, if that narrative's true, the way Brown tells it, then bring him in, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's see what else he can do with these guys, right?
I would say 60%.
I think that's fair, 60-65%.
Yeah, you know, working with the running backs. Matt, the last one, the most controversial one, it's been talked about. You, I know, and I have texted about it. People are talking about it. Redemption story for Steve Sarkisian. I'm going to say thumbs up. I think he would be a terrific offensive coordinator. I think there are lots of problems if you bring him in, besides, of course, the personal issues. but just like, you know, again, the same thing you have with Detmer is your replacement, one of your staff, if things go bad. But the flip side to all this is Sarkisian has a 0% chance of being hired.
Yeah, I don't...
This season. And down the road, maybe.
Down the road, perhaps. But there's no way... There's no way the powers that be at BYU are going to get comfortable quickly enough with Steve Sarkisian for him to come in and be the OC in 2016. And that's the only job you bring him here for. He's not coming to BYU to do anything other than
that. No, he's not coming to be the quarterback's coach.
No.
And the flip side to this is, you know, I believe this is still true. I was trying to Google it, but wasn't finding additional information. He's involved in a lawsuit with USC.
Yes. It's a wrongful termination suit.
You don't, even if the circumstances were different, you don't want any part of that.
You do not want to get into the middle of that.
You don't want to be in the middle of that. Matt, one of the things came up, we talked about Simmons. We talked about what Satake said. He said he wanted to run the ball. He wanted to be balanced running and passing and wanted to win in the trenches. I asked our listeners, what do you hope our offense looks like in 2016 in one of our TweetBag polls? Do you have a TweetBag poll sound effect?
TweetBag poll.
Oh, there you go. That's terrible. I said air raid, Stanford, like power running. I also said go fast, go hard, and I said other. 56% said air raid. 28% Stanford, 8% go fast, go hard, 8% other. Matt, what do you hope our offense looks like next year?
I'd like to see more of like just a pro-style offense.
Yes, that's what I want.
That's what I'd like to see us do. I don't know if that's what they have in mind, and I don't know if we're looking at the right people to do that. You know, one of the guys that didn't make it on our list is Jay Hill from Weber State.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm just throwing another name out there. But as far as the offenses go, that's what I'd like to see. But it's all going to come down to who Satake can find to come in and run the offense.
Yes, I agree. But I want a power. I would like a pro style offense. I'd like to see us use tight ends and multiple tight ends. I'd like to see us using a lot more formations, if that makes sense, and a lot more of the quarterback under the center.
So do you bring Chad Lewis in to coach the tight ends? Do you think you can get him to do that?
Chad Lewis or George or, you know,
I saw a picture, I think it was taken Las Vegas Bowl weekend, of Kalani Sitake with Atula Mealy. Atula Mealy was the better tight end of those two when they were playing. Before Mealy hurt his knee.
Oh yeah, Mealy was fantastic.
He was awesome. Drafted by the Seahawks, but I think the knees is really what prevented us from seeing what he could do in the NFL.
Yes,
but that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's a lot. We will next week when we talk. I think a lot of the staff may be in place. And we'll be able to talk, and we'll know a lot better than, you know, depends on who he hires, what is their pedigree offensively as a coach. And you can, like, if it's Simmons, it's probably an air raid kind of offense, right? Because that's where he's been tutored. If it's someone from that Sarkisian type of side, it's probably going to be a little bit more pro style, right? But there are people that are probably being considered that, as you mentioned, Matt, at the beginning, that we're not even talking about.
So that's kind of what I was wondering, and I'd be interested in your opinion on this. Do you think Satake is out to find the right offense, and he's going to find the coordinator, whoever it is, whether or not that person has got ties to the program or not? Or do you think that he's going to stay inside the pool of candidates with ties to the program that know the school, that can help generate excitement among fan base and alumni and all that? Where do you think that gets weighted?
I don't think he gives a crap about what fans and alumni want out of the offense. That would just, I think, be counter to his personality. I think I'm guessing, and this is total speculation on my part, he's a former offensive player, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who has been a defensive coordinator. I feel pretty certain that he knows what kind of offense he wants, and he's going to hire accordingly. Because as a defensive coordinator, you think to yourself, I want to hire the kind of offense that I dreaded playing against. Right?
Right.
And I don't think, you know, I think as a head coach, that's the way to do it. I think you want to set, I think you want your offense and your defense to meld, right? You want the styles to fit. I think one of the problems with go fast, go hard was Broncos' defensive style. I don't think it was a very good fit for that. And I think that showed. And that's, I think, one of the reasons they slowed the offense down over the last season and a half. Because it was leaving our defense constantly gassed, right? And we didn't have enough depth to rotate, like, D-line the way you need to if you're doing 80 snaps a game. So I think he's going to have that kind of that in his head. What about you?
I agree with what you're saying, and that makes me think that the offensive coordinator is not on this list.
Yeah, I think
I don't know who it's going to be, but I don't think it's going to be any of these guys.
Yep. Well, Matt, we've got not much show left, and still a lot to talk about. So let's talk about the what's it called? The Hawaii Airlines Diamond Classic.
Diamond Head Classic.
Diamond Head Classic, sorry.
Diamond Head, I believe, is a mountain.
I believe that is correct.
Honolulu. You can see it from Waikiki.
Waikiki, nice. Well done. So, Matt.
Beautiful place.
SportsReference.com, I'm sorry, MacyRatings.com has BYU as the 83rd best team in basketball. Our offense is 98th, and our defense is 87th. So all of you that are on Twitter saying our defense is terrible, this is the best defense we've had in a couple of years. I've watched the games. The statistics back me up. So stop tweeting how terrible the defense is. Just stop. It's not terrible. Not like where we had an elite offense last year. My worry is that 98th ranked offense.
It's not good.
It's not good. The defense came back to where we wanted it to be when we talked preseason. I think the defense is solid enough. The offense just fell so far off, and we talked about that last week, so we're not going to belabor it. Matt, they play Harvard first up tomorrow night. Harvard is 170th overall, according to Mazy Rating. SportsReference.com has their offense at 274 and their defense at 93rd. So they are a defense-first team. Junior Xena, not Xena Warrior Princess, by the way. Don't make that joke, dude. Otosomwan? I don't know how to say his last name. 6'9", forward, 12.7 points to lead the team, 10.1 rebounds to lead the team, and 1.7 assists. The stat to remember, he only averaged 4 points per game last year as a sophomore.
It's a big step up.
They are very balanced offensively. Matt, prediction time, BYU versus Harvard.
I think BYU beats Harvard.
I believe they beat Harvard as well. I think they beat them by 10. I think we're a much better team. Of course, that didn't stop us from losing to Long Beach State, but I think things have come, and Zach Selyus is one of the reasons.
He's coming along all right, huh?
He is. Quite frankly, I think you're going to see Chase Fisher, if he can't be consistent, lose some playing time, and I think you might mix and match with who starts. We'll see tomorrow night if Coach Rose makes any changes. Then we will play either Auburn or New Mexico. Okay, Auburn is a offense first team led by Kareem Canty. They're 6 foot point guard, 20 points, 2.9 boards, 5.6 assists a game. He's shooting 44% from the 3-point line, Matt. I don't want to play him.
No.
Or not New Mexico, good. Who is ranked 50th right now in the country, according to MacyRatings.com. They're led by Elijah Brown, 6'4" guard, sophomore, 19.1 points, 5.9 rebounds, 3.1 assists. He shoots 86% from the free throw line. Matt, if we play Auburn or New Mexico, can we beat them?
I think we're in trouble against either of those teams. And so I'm saying that we get into that round, and the bracket for this tournament, it looks like
it's crazy.
It's like one of those joke flow charts you see on Facebook, right?
Yeah. It's absolutely insane. It took me like 10 minutes to figure out. So who plays who in the second round? So I think we're in trouble. We got an Auburn. I think we've got matchup problems. And they're probably equal to us. New Mexico is a pretty good team.
Yeah, I think we're in trouble in either of those two games.
So, Matt, prediction time. BYU will play 3. How many do they win?
I think they win 2.
I think they win 1.
Ooh, punch to the gut right there.
It all depends on the matchups, but max two, I don't think we go through and win three.
See, I just feel like when I look at the other side of that bracket and I think about the teams we end up playing after we lose that second game, and I feel good about our chances.
Yeah, and that's fair. That actually is very fair. That is definitely the counter argument to mine. I'm just afraid if something weird happens on the other side of that bracket and we get somebody better. You know, the thing with all this is it's in Hawaii and the teams, you can never guess who's actually going to be engaged, right?
Some it's of these Hawaii, it's Christmas, yes, it's all sorts of craziness.
Things can happen. So we shall see. But I still think that, you know, this team is, they need to win two for their tournament chances. Losing three games in this tournament, because like you said, that third game is likely to be against a lesser opponent. Right. If you lose to Harvard and then somebody else that's lesser, you're in trouble.
You're in real trouble come tournament time because you're not going to get the wins in conference that you need for your resume to get into the bracket.
Yes, and we'll talk about this next week when we preview the conference, Matt, but it's not just Gonzaga. St. Mary's turns out to be really good this year, which we did not predict. So it has changed the dynamic within the conference. Yeah. Substantially. So, Matt, this is the part of the podcast where we preview 14 bowl games.
Yes.
14 of them, Matt, of which we know very little about most of these teams.
Almost nothing,
but we're still going to do it. Let's start, and this starts on Thursday the 24th. We already ran through in the last podcast all the bowl games through the 23rd. So on the 24th, Christmas Eve, Matt, at 11 a.m., it's Central Time, because I'm in Central Time and I don't care about you people in other time zones. Middle Tennessee 7-5, Western Michigan 7-5. Western Michigan is favored. Are they the Broncos? They're the Broncos, right?
They are the Western Michigan Broncos. The directional Michigan schools.
The directional Michigan. Where's Central Michigan? 4.5-point favorite. Matt, I am taking Western Michigan and the points. I think they win by a touchdown.
I'm taking Middle Tennessee mostly because a long time ago, I played as Middle Tennessee for several years in a dynasty on NCAA and just dominated.
There you go. It's good crushed a reason it. As any. A crushed percent it. Chance you see any of this game.
11 a.m., 75%.
I was going to say myself, 60%. That night, Christmas Eve night, it is my beloved San Diego State Aztecs, 10-3, and 7-5 Cincinnati. The Aztecs are favored by 1.5. Matt, who you got?
I'm taking Cincinnati because on this podcast, we can never pick the Aztecs.
That is correct. We cannot. I'm taking Cincinnati by 7 touchdowns.
Wow.
Yes. It's completely irrational, but you know how I feel about San Diego State.
What's the Cincinnati mascot again?
Bearcats.
What is a bearcat?
Well, it's interesting you ask that question because it is when a bear and a cat mated.
Oh, yeah.
You like that?
We had to get that in one more time. You were very clear that time.
Yes.
Very clear.
Yes,
was perfect, my friend.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to be clear this time. So no games on Christmas Day. Thank you very much, college football.
What's up with that?
Percent chance you see any of that game on Christmas Eve?
100%.
At some point I'll turn it on while we're preparing for Christmas.
Some people watch It's a Wonderful Life while they're getting stuff ready for Christmas. I watch the Hawaii Bowl.
I watch both.
And I don't even care who the teams are.
You know
I
what?
Watch it.
I meant to introduce this as the Hawaii Aren't You Glad That BYU Wasn't In It Bowl. Because I did not want BYU in that bowl.
Wouldn't you love San Diego State and BYU in a bowl game in Hawaii?
It wouldn't have been San Diego State. We would have taken San Diego State's place.
Well, then we wouldn't have played Cincinnati.
No, they would have had another American team in there, but I didn't want to play another American team. We're like halfway in their conference anyway. Saturday, December 27th, it's the St. Petersburg.
It's actually the 26th, bowl. But that's fine.
What did I say?
27th.
Oh, 27th. 26th. It's 6-6 Connecticut. deserves to be nowhere near a bowl game. And 9-3 Marshall. Marshall is only favored by 5. I'm taking Marshall and the points. I've watched Connecticut. They're not good.
Marshall's favored by 5 touchdowns or 5 points?
5 points.
Yeah, I'm taking Marshall and the points here. The Thundering Herd are going to thunder all over these guys.
And all 7 UConn football fans are angry with this. Later that afternoon, it's 8-4 Miami and 8-4 Washington State in the Hyundai Sun Bowl. Matt, Washington State's favored by 2.5. Who you got?
I got Washington State here.
I got Miami. I think the I think Miami is kind of. I'm going to take the Hurricanes. This isn't, you know, obviously 19.
These aren't your daddy's Hurricanes.
No, they're not. They're not. No one's going to get arrested. Maybe. Oh, was that? Is that too soon?
That's too soon.
Too late?
And let's be honest, it's probably not
probably true. That's 6-6 Washington, Matt, in the next one, the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl against 9-4 Southern Mississippi. Washington is favored, despite being 6-6, by 8.5 points. I am taking the Huskies, but I think Southern Mississippi will cover.
I was going to say that same thing. Washington wins, but by less than that much.
Yes.
And I do want to throw in here real quickly, if you've not had Zaxby's chicken, that stuff is delicious.
I have never had it.
It is delicious. If you find yourself in a place where they have Zaxby's, you need to hit that up.
Okay. All right. Rock on. That's an endorsement for Matt. And we trust Matt with our food choices. Matt, after that is the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, the terrible bowl game in Yankee Stadium, and terrible also because of the teams that are in it. Indiana 6-6, Duke 7-5. Jeez. Indiana is favored by 2.5 points. Oh, we didn't even do the percent chance. Will you see Connecticut Marshall? 100%.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Miami Washington State.
100%. I'll watch some of that.
Washington State Southern Miss. 100%.
100%. I'll watch some of that.
Indiana and Duke. Indiana's favored by 2.5, Matt. I am taking Duke because I can't pick the Hoosiers.
I'm taking Duke because they're a better football team.
Ah, I like that. I like that reasoning even better. Percent chance you see any of this? 100%, right?
100%.
Later that afternoon, the Camping World Independence Bowl. I can't make these names up. Shreveport, Louisiana. 6-6 Tulsa. 6-6 Virginia Tech. The Hokies are favored by 14.5. I'm taking the Hokies and the points.
Yes, yes. Bye-bye, absolutely.
Tulsa. Bye-bye, Tulsa. 100% chance I see this game.
Yep.
At least some of it. That night, it's the teams that we almost beat and did beat bowl, also known as the Foster's Farms Bowl in Santa Clara. 8-4 UCLA, 5-7 Nebraska. Also shouldn't be anywhere near bowl. UCLA is favored by 6.5. Nebraska is kind of a Jekyll and Hyde. I am going to take UCLA, but the Huskers cover.
You're crazy. UCLA crushes these guys.
I don't know. Nebraska's, when they're on,
Stop it.
All right, fine.
There's no way.
That's fine.
The Bruins cruise.
Bruins cruise, baby.
This is like a home game. When you compare where these two teams are traveling from.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I don't want to play in Nebraska, in Lincoln, Nebraska this time of year. I'm just saying.
Nobody wants to be in Lincoln, Nebraska this time. Just kidding. Just kidding, Lincoln. We love you.
We love you, Lincoln. We love you absolutely.
I think I've driven through Lincoln, Nebraska this time of year.
Yeah, it's not, I feel like it's I not have. Pretty. So percent chance you see some of that game, 100%, right?
Oh, 100%. It's a beautiful venue. It'll be a fun game to watch.
Yep. Monday the 28th, Matt, they of course do not schedule against the NFL, which is smart. The Military Bowl presented by Northrop Grumman, of course. I said Grumman. It's Grumman? Gosh, mm-hmm. Look at me. 10-2 Navy, coached by what some people thought should have been our coach, and 8-4 Pittsburgh. Navy's favored by 3. I've got Navy and the points.
Navy rolls.
Roll.
Wins by at least a touchdown.
Percent chance you see some of that game. It's not very high for me. I will be at work.
I may be working from home that day, so don't tell my boss, but I'll probably see some of this game.
All right. Later that afternoon, Central Michigan 7-5 against 5-7 Minnesota Gophers. Interestingly enough, of course, Minnesota's favored by 6 points. I'm taking the Gophers and the points.
I'm going to take the directional Michigan school here.
Look at you. Look at you. Any particular reason?
No.
No. No reason.
No, actually, not really. I mean, it is the Quick Lane Bowl. Anything can happen in the Quick Lane Bowl.
That's true. I didn't
is
even
that
say
like one of those toll booth companies? I don't even know what that is.
I don't know. I know it's, but, it's an oil change.
Okay. So kind of.
Kind of. Kind of like that, except totally different.
No, I think that you know, when you look at, yeah, if you just kind of skim through their schedule here, you know, they lost to some really good teams. I think they might be a little bit better than advertised. I think they, you know, the second, especially the back nine of their season, they look pretty good. I'm not super confident in Minnesota either.
I am not. I'm not either, but I'm not confident in Central Michigan. Plus, I live in Minnesota, so go Gophers? Something? I don't know.
Was that a question?
I don't know. It was kind of a question. On Tuesday, December 29th, Matt, we'll do four more bowls here, get us through to the 30th. The first one up that day is the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl. I thought we already had an Armed Forces Bowl.
It was the Military Bowl, I think, was the other one.
7-5, California. I'm trying. 8-5, Air Force. Cal is favored by 7. I'm taking the Falcons.
I've got the Bears.
I can't pick California.
I know you can't pick California, but I think California wins this game. I think it's close. What's the spread on this?
7.
7? I'm probably also taking the points.
Yeah, it's probably wise. I'm not picking the Bears. Percent chance you see some of that game.
Tuesday at 1, this is unlikely. I'm going to go down to like 30%.
I'm at like 5 or 10 percent. 4:30 that afternoon Central Time. This is where we start seeing some actual games, Matt, where teams were good during the regular season. Number 10, North Carolina, 11-2. Number 17, Baylor, 9-3. North Carolina is favored by a point. I'm going with Baylor.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going with Baylor. I don't think the ACC is overrated.
I've got the Heels.
You got the Heels. That's the Athletic Bowl, by the way, in Orlando, Florida. Percent chance I see some of this game, 100%.
100% for me as well.
I may even set the DVR.
This will be a good game. I think this will be a fun game to watch.
Yes.
And I think you're going to find out that North Carolina is better than you expected. I think that conference is a little bit better than you thought.
Well, okay.
And I feel like this, you know, had really high hopes. I had really high hopes for Baylor at the beginning of the season, and they disappointed me.
Yes. Yeah, they
have. So now I want them to disappoint you.
Okay. All right. Matt, what is more exciting than seeing two mediocre Mountain West teams face off in a bowl game?
It's pretty awesome, and we all need to take a moment and thank Craig Thompson for this.
Yes, the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl in Tucson, 6-6 Nevada, 7-5 Colorado State. There are no winners here.
No.
The Rams are
favored. How does this guy still have a job?
I don't know. The Rams are favored by 3. I don't care who wins. I'll take the Rams and the points.
I'm refusing to pick a winner of this game.
Percent chance I see some of this game is 0.
Yeah, out of principle, I'm not going to watch it.
I'm not watching it. That night, Matt, another interesting matchup, I think. Number 20, LSU, 8-3 out of the SEC. Texas Tech, 7-5. Not as good as the game with North Carolina and Baylor. That's the Advocare V100 Texas Bowl in Houston. I am definitely going with the Tigers, but I think I am going to take the Tigers in the points, but I think the Red Raiders hang in there for much of the game.
I think the Red Raiders do make it a game, but LSU comes out on top here. And yes. I've toyed with the idea of actually going to this.
Is that still in play, or do you not know yet?
It's possible. It still may happen. It's not been ruled out. I guess I'll say that.
Because that's at an NRG Stadium.
NRG Stadium.
Yeah.
See what they did there?
Yeah, very clever. Tickets are available on StubHub starting at $44.
See?
You know what's crazy? StubHub, the price for the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl starts at $84.
That makes
no sense.
Well, I think what's showing here on my computer is 6 tickets available from $84. How many tickets are they selling?
I don't know. As we said before, there's no winners in that one. So, Matt, that was a bunch of bowls. We'll be back next week to preview all of the remaining bowl games, including the college football playoff.
Hey, can we just take a second and just express our thanks for the presence of the college football playoff? It's not perfect. I'd like to see 8 teams in there. But, guys, we're in the playoff era.
Do you really want to see 8 teams in there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I want to see. Okay, because right now that would mean, and we're way over time, so we might as well keep talking. Clemson and Notre Dame would be a first-round game. That'd be pretty interesting.
That'd be awesome.
Alabama, Ohio State.
I could watch that.
Michigan State, Stanford.
I see no downside so far.
Oklahoma and Iowa. You're right. We should do eight. That would be so awesome.
Here's the deal with the eight, and I know we're out of time, but here's the deal with the eight.
Just
with
keep
the
firing, man.
Versus four. Both years, when you put in the four, there's that the 5, 6, 7, 8 teams, you look at that and you think, you know what? In a playoff, one of those teams might pull that out.
Yes.
Now, you get much past eight, and I think you can feel good about, okay, like now you're stretching a little bit.
Well, last year, I've got the rankings in front. You would have had three lost teams in the playoffs last year.
Right.
You don't want three lost teams in the playoffs.
No, but some years you're going to get that.
No, I don't want three lost teams. I would love a system, Matt, where the committee picks. Of course, you can't do this. It's totally impractical. The committee picks the number.
Oh, so it's not the same every year?
Yes. Can you imagine the absolute like insanity when they come out? We only think it's a 4-team playoff, and they can flex between 4 and 8.
Oh, no. What if you're going to let them do that? Let's do a 6-team playoff with a plan.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
That's pretty crazy.
That would be pretty crazy. But if you look at last year, it would have been Alabama versus Michigan State, Oregon versus Mississippi State, Florida State versus TCU, and Ohio State and Baylor.
Mm-hmm. That's not as exciting.
It would have been awesome. What are you talking about? Ohio State and Baylor? That would have been awesome.
I was just trying to get that reaction out of you.
Oh. You're right.
And it worked. Played you like a fiddle.
So, Matt, I'm going to warn everybody at the beginning of this podcast to listen it at 1.5x speed.
It's a lot of talking.
It's been a lot of talking, but it's been awesome talking. So thanks for those of you that stayed with us. Feel free to tweet out RS to the end. Does that make sense? Rise and shout to the end?
Sure.
Just tweet at us and told us you made it to the end. I think it's fun when we have these marathon ones and there are not many people
and,
that make
and
it.
And Sweeney lets us know that he listened to the whole thing.
That's right. Well, thank you for downloading and listening. We will be back next week previewing bowls, talking about hoops, talking about maybe some positional coaches have been hired and coordinators have been hired. Go to CougarFan.com for all your Cougar news. Thank you for downloading and listening. We will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!